to hand over to Harry from his home group's Bethnal Green on a Wednesday night. The first old timer he came across was Sailor Dave, and his first meeting was St Clement's in East London. So with that, yeah, over to you, mate.
Thanks very much.
Do you want to change places?
No,
no,
all
right.
Do you want another hug?
Yes. I haven't had one from you yet.
Come on, man.
Shut up, woman.
Thanks very much. My name's Harry and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Harry.
Thanks very much, Mick, for asking me to come along today. It's a privilege to share any AA meeting. I think my friend started off like that this morning. So wasn't always like that for me. I wasn't very well. We wasn't, you know, nobody's very well, are they, when they come to AA?
Yeah.
But, I'll share what it was like, what happened, and what my life is like today. I had a great childhood. A lot of people say where I'm from, like alcoholism only comes from a certain part of the world. It comes from everywhere. It comes from every background. You know, it doesn't care who it affects. You know, I had a great childhood. I was thoroughly spoiled by my mum. My mum was like Catherine Tate. I don't know if anybody's ever watched Catherine Tate. And she adored me. Absolute. I couldn't do nothing wrong. You know, as a youngster, I could do nothing. But even as an older person, she died about 15 months ago. And in her eyes, I could do no wrong, you know, which was great, you know what I mean? And I was quite a sicky child. I was in and out of hospital a lot. I was quite a mummy's boy. When you're spoilt, you tend to become a mummy's boy. I had a good dad. My dad was a silversmith in Hatton Gardens. And I had a sister who's she's 2.5 years older than me, you know. And she was a thing in the 60s called a free reader. You know, I'm not sure what they call it. And that was a thing called a dunce in the 60s. If you couldn't read or write, it was called a dunce, and they used to want to hit you, actually, in school. If you couldn't get in the corner and that sort of thing. I was very rebellious, though. You know, if a teacher hit me, I hit him back, you know. And I'd have got that thing as a problem child, you know. And psychiatrists used to pit me in a room and with, like, big toys and everything and say, like, what do you make of that? But I had a thing called body language. Body language is basically, I used to not either look at you in the eye and just say, I'm going to kill you, or just look away. I was uninterested, you know, and I knew how to shut down at an early age. And I can remember being, you know, it talks about we were, you know, as restless, irritable, and discontent. You know, I was full of suspicion, you know, I felt ill at ease and not enough, you know, and that was just in my own front room with the family, you know what I mean? And I can remember in my house, my mum was the governor, you know, whatever my mum wanted, my dad would do, you know. So, you know, and it was in the 70s. I can remember my dad used to come home from work, and every year my mum wanted the front room done up. Every year, you know, it was in the days when they had flowers on the walls and everything. I think it's coming back now. And where I live, it's called Bethnal Green, but they call it Shoreditch now. So when people say, would you like to go Shoreditch? And, all trendy, and all the things you threw out in the 70s, they're paying bombs for. You know, I've got one of them Adidas original bags, and they just should look it up, how much it's worth. You know what I mean? I don't know how I kept it, because I used to throw everything away when I was young. But, you know, my mum, so my dad used to come home from work. Crossroads used to be on. I used to love Benny. I don't know anyone. I love Benny. I don't know why. I do. Yeah, I do know why I love Benny, but I loved him. And Miss Diane. You know, I remember Miss Diane. Miss Diane. I do like Miss Diane. I remember that. And if you're young, look it up. It's worth a look up. You know what I mean? And, I can remember getting a resentment. You know, I remember resenting my mum. You know, because my dad used to come home, and everything else worked around the telly. You know, like, our whole life was based around the telly. You know, I remember colour tellies coming in and everything. I can remember, my dad used to do this decorating, like, and she used to choose a colour. She's like, my dad used to bring the book home, one of them, like, paper books, you know, like, wallpaper books. And she used to go, she'd take hours going through it. I used to think, just fucking choose a colour. Just choose a piece of paper, you know what I mean? Because I'm very like that. I still like it now. I'm like, if you want to say yes or no, I don't think of it. I try to think more now with the programme. I try to think more. And I remember she'd go through the book and she'd pick this, like, green wallpaper. then it had to be green paint, and then she wanted a green sofa, and then everything would be green, you know. And my dad would finish his decorating, but he only had like 2 hours to do the decorating between about 7 and 9, but then he had to clean up, and then my mum would moan about the dust, you know. And then when my dad had finished after about a week or so decorating, he never used to say, "Is that nice, Kat?" But my mum used to look at it and go, squint her eyes, and I'm not my mum actually, but squint her eyes and go, "I should have had the yellow." And I got resentment. I used to get resentments towards my mum. You know, I mean, the woman that loved me and brought me into the world, I was resentful of her. You know, I used to think, my dad was an ABA boxing champion when he was young, got his cups indoors. And he was funny, my dad. I never seen him have a fight, you know, and I remember I had a fight with my sister when I was quite young, and the punishment for my mum and dad, well, my dad mainly, was I had to go to the pub and sit outside, you know. And I remember I was about 11, and I remember sitting outside the pub, and then going into the pub with my nan. My nan was, we're all Jewish descent from the East End of London, and my nan was about 18 stone, and she used a black eyeliner, and she used to wear a pinny, you know, and she had a tattoo on her arm, you know, of a big Guinness heart, you know, the Guinness heart, like that, and with the word Guinness written on there. She couldn't read or write neither, you know, and it's the first tattoo I'd ever seen, not like the nice tattoos the young ladies have these days, you know, apparently. And I remember being in the pub, I'd be in between my mum and my dad and my nan and my uncle, work my uncle and all that, and they go, "Here, Harry boy, have a drop of that. Don't tell your nan." My nan would only be sitting like one. Then my dad would go, "Here, Harry boy, have a drop of that. Don't tell your nan." And I'd be like, you know, and then uncle would work me, uncle, "Harry boy, have a drop of that." I loved it, you know what I mean? And then the pot man go, "Ladies and gentlemen, can we have your glasses, please? Can we have your glasses, please?" And the people want to leave, left. But then they let the curtains go over, and they pick the bolts up. Bolts go up like Dolby sound, like that, and then the band would start up, like with a little, I don't know what them things are called, but you put on the drums that make a little shh, 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 shh. I fucking loved it, you know what I mean? And my nan would get hold of me, and she'd like pull her like between her bosoms like that, and give it like, "Don't forget he's taking you home, man, in your heart." And I loved it, you know what I mean? I loved it, you know, I was at home. And it was a punishment. I was supposed to be there because I was at a fight with my sister. Half past one at night, we were going, Dad never got drunk with disorderly, but my nan used to like lean on me, but I'm 11, she's 18 stone. But I was a big lump, yeah. 11, you know what I mean? And I was half drunk myself. But they say we sort out sorted places, open, find understanding and approval, you know? And I didn't want to be understood, you know? And I didn't want to be approved of. You know, and I found a thing called instant bad attention from a young age, you know, and I remember my first day at school, we went to school and my sister said, "You've got to wear your tie." I said, "I don't want to wear a tie." She said, "You've got to wear your tie." And I remember coming out of Whitechapel Station, you know, and there was an alley, right, you come out of Whitechapel Station, you know, you can smell alcoholism, can't you? You know what I mean? That pissy smell, you know, and I remember she said, as you come out of the alley, she went to me, "You can't go down that alley. There was shit down there, there was piss, there was people using heroin, that sort of stuff. There were people, street drinkers there." She said, "Don't go down that alley." And it was like a cut through to school. And I went down that alley. And I was attracted to sordid places, you know. And I looked into these places that were boarded up, where street people live. And I looked into there and I was interested in it. But I remember my first day at school, I went there without my tie, 600 kids there. And the first year's at the front, and the headmaster who's on the stage went, "What's your name?" I said to him, "What's your name?" He said, "I asked the questions." I went, "Do you?" He went, "Come here." I went, "No, you come and get me." And he jumped off the stage and started running around after me, around the school like that. Straight away, instant bad attention. You know what I mean? And I can remember going football as a youngster in the early 70s, and got attracted to football violence as a youngster. And the first game I went, it was all on the pitch, and it was before like Facebook and all that, but it was on the news actually. And my mum and dad said, "You all right, Harry? Was you all right?" But yeah, I'm all right. I loved it, you know. I fell in with the wrong crowd, at the right time or the right time or the wrong crowd, one or the other. I was just attracted to them. And I was attracted to street drunks. I used to follow them. I remember even going back younger. There was a guy called, a black guy called Danny the Tramp, and he used to wear a big overcoat, you know. And I remember following him. And he clocked me following him. He said, "What do you want?" I said, "Drink." He said, "No." So I carried on following him. He said, "What do you want?" I said, "Drink." He said, "No." I carried on following him. I got persistent. He said, "What do you want?" I said, "Drink." He said, "One drop." And then I was still carrying on following the poor soul, you know what I mean? And he lived on the middle of the Allgate East One Way system in a shack, you know. And I got into that shack with him. And I was just attracted to these places like Commercial Street. Commercial Street was a place in the 70s where all the ladies of the night and the robbers and punters, they all used to go there, you know what I mean? And I love the third tradition. It says, "Who comes to Way A?" It says loose women, queers, crackpots. It says we don't care how grave and emotional your mental disorders are. We're just glad you're here. And I thought that sounds right, you know. It just went on like that, sorting out sorted places, you know. And I remember I had as a young lad, even before I took a drink, I'm not sure. You know, in our book, it talks about the word prejudice. It talks about in the fore. The first thing apparent is this world and its people are often quite wrong. And to consider that as far as we got. You hurt me, I'll hurt you. Hurt people, hurt people. And I remember I was prejudiced against this uncle, Reg. He was from North London, but he was an Arsenal supporter. So my dad picked me right there. You know what I mean? But Uncle Reg used to wear a dicky bow and a waistcoat and us puppy shoes. You know, nobody wore dicky bows where I lived. You know what I mean? And he couldn't drink. My dad said he can't drink because my dad was one of them people who could drink 20 pints of light beer and he wouldn't get disorderly. You know what I mean? He wouldn't start reminiscing about the old days. And I remember my Uncle Reg come over and I remember pouring a drink from my Uncle Reg and my nan was there. And I remember pouring a drink. My Uncle Reg liked whiskey and ginger. So I poured this drink, 3/4 of whiskey and a little bit of ginger. And my Uncle Reg took a drink. Bearing in mind, I'd already been told that my Uncle Reg couldn't drink. So he took one of my drinks. And he went like that. He went green. And he went, "Harry boy, it's the other way around." I thought, "Just get it in you, man. Just get it down." But my nan, who was a big lump, 18 stone, Guinness heart, you know, black eyebrows. I poured her a gin and orange. Same amount, 3/4 of gin, little bit of orange. And she took one of my drinks and her eyebrows went up like that. It was like the unspoken word. And I don't know about you, I don't know if anybody, I know a few of you people remember this, two people that are young, I don't know, maybe two or three, maybe more, that are younger than myself. Now four, I'm going around checking all the young people. So you all look young. I don't want to upset you all. But I was like a $6 million man. I used to be able to spot trouble miles away. I used to be like, alcoholic, like me, lunatic, like me, lunatic alert, you know what I mean? But I make light of my drink, because it tells us in that book, you know what I mean? And, you know, it talks about if the newcomer doesn't see the laughter and that, you know, because it's a serious illness and it's a killer illness, you know, but what happened to my drinking? My dad hated the craze. He didn't like, he was a hard worker, my dad, you know, and he'd see some of the things that they'd done in the snooker clubs and things like that, and he prejudiced me against them. And I used to be quite, I'm still quite lad, you know what I mean? Actually, I'm not, believe it or not, quite than I make out, you know. But I remember my dad didn't like the craze, so that prejudice I had, I used to go around saying, I don't like the craze and all that. But little did I know, until I got sober, I actually realised that one of my mates, his dad was part of the Cray gang. I met him when I was about 15. Sounds really young at 15, but at 15 I'd already met other people that you shouldn't really be hanging around with at 15. I was a big lump, thought I was a man and everything, and I'd fight anybody, you know what I mean? I used to get battered a lot. And this went on for another 9 years, between 15 and 24. So between that age, I went to prison a lot. Oh, I shit myself a lot. I drank piss a lot. I don't share in a general way. You know, if somebody thinks I'm unwell, that's their problem, not my problem. You know what I mean? It's, I've never met an alcoholic yet that shares in a general way. You know, so I got arrested about 37 times. Went in prison for about 4 years. I was all right. You all right? I'm all right. I've got to go. Only back to my cell. You know what I mean? But I was all right. You know, I was unapproachable. You know, I drank my little boy's milk tokens. I endangered his life. One of the things I went to prison for towards the end of my drinking. My mum used to visit me. She's got on a bus, a train, a ferry, another bus, and she's come visit me and go, "How are you, Harry?" I go, "Yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right." And she's go, "They're looking after you." Yeah. And then she'd tell me, "You take care of my Harry boy." You know, and no matter how many times I said to her, "Mum, I got into trouble because of drink." "Ah, they picked on you, Harry boy." You know what I mean? And, anyway. What happened to me is in, I went to Brixton Prison in the summer of 85 for endangering my son's life, and psychiatric reports, being sedated. You know, somebody mentioned it here yesterday. And I love being sedated. You know, all you have to do is jump up, attack an officer, and you get sedated, you know. And in the summer of 85, I was released just before the November in 85, and went to me, I was on probation, and the probation officer had been visited by AA, and obviously I went to the probation, I used to have this thing, you know, and I call it now when people, like, happens a lot in mobile phones in the meetings now, don't they, you know, so people spend more times on their mobile phone than they do listening, you know what I mean, and it's like, I've got my mobile phone on for the time, but whatever goes on now, you know, somebody was to die, this is very important to me, you know. And I was very fortunate I got sober when there was no mobile phones, you know what I mean. And, I had a body language thing going on. Because I always knew, you know, like sometimes you see, like, people say, "Oh, I'm going to kill that person." Oh, they never kill anybody. You know, it's like when you see murders going on, don't you? You see murders and they go to the scene. "Oh, he's a lovely man, that man, you know." Killed all his family, you know. School teacher, you know, and I never thought he was like that. You know what I mean? I'm not a specialist on murders or anything like that. but it's true, isn't it, in a way, you know. And I went to my first, I got 12 step on November the 3rd, 1985. Billy Ocean was number one in the charts. When the going gets tough, it's tough to go shopping. And I never had a sense of humour. And it's a vital ingredient for my recovery, sense of humour. Don't take, what's it saying, traditional four, when we're like so intense on ourselves, you know what I mean? And AA was like loads of rules and regulations they were trying to pass and pick from their head for a while. Couldn't swear, had to talk about this, had to pray like this, had to do this and all that. But it's all been whittled down a bit, and it talks about don't take yourself too damn seriously, you know? And, but I remember being 12 steps and, Ron Notes was his name, my probation officer, and I was like, it's body language, I was looking out the window. I was uninterested. I would always arrive late and leave early. I was like that, looking out the window. Then Ron said to me, he said, "How much you drink, Harry?" And I've never had a sense of humour. I went, "Not enough." He said, "Why'd you get into trouble, Harry?" I said, "People pick on me." And nobody picked on me. You know, nobody. I used to pick on gangs. You used to get battering by the gang, I didn't care. People used to cross over. Gangs used to cross over. You know, in sobriety, I can always tell if I've upset anybody from years ago. I live in the same area in the East End. And I still see people that I've upset from 30 odd years ago. I can always tell by just by their face, you know, and I'm like, you know. But, and then he was to ask me a question, and I can use recovery words like revolutionise. You know, he's asked me a question, which was to revolutionise my life, basically change my life. Because it says in working with others, when working with you, man, best use everyday language, keep it simple. Don't lass it up with all Freudian ideas, you know. And, he said, "Do you want to do something about your drinking, Harry?" And I said, "Oh, wait. You're right, Ed. My head went, "What do you say that for?" You know what I mean? And went to my, he rang a lady called Jeanette, and he said, what are you going to be wearing? And I had a Chris Waddle haircut. Do you remember the Chris Waddle haircut? My mum paid for it. Mum paid for me blue top. My mum paid for me blue trousers. because I always shit myself. And always ripped the... always got blood over them, you know, and things like that. My mum was always there, you know. And so I said I had blue top, blue trousers. And then so I said, I'll meet you at Marlin Station. She turned up. She went, you Aaron? I went, no. She went, yes, you are. I'll get in the car. And we went to St. Clement's Hospital, which was a local psychiatric unit. And forgetting that, you know, a year or so previous, I tried to break into the psychiatric unit. I got up on the big gate and, you know, and the police come one side, a security guard come the other side. I'm on the top of it. The policeman said to the security guard, is he trying to get out? And I shouted out, no, I'm trying to get in. You know, because I wanted to get in. I did break in there once and threw somebody out of bed and took the medication, you know. And I went to my first meeting and I was disturbed. I love seeing people who are disturbed in AA, and then when people get a little bit, oh, he's not well, you know. I spoke to somebody yesterday who had a fall out of a meeting, you know, just because he wouldn't be like everybody else, you know. Some are sicker than others when it comes to AA, you know. We're not a cult, you know. And I remember I met a lady called Jessie, which is Angie's mum. And Jessie's like she's like a white version of Mr. T, but in a Glaswegian version. And she's 5'4", and she had all the AA knuckle dusters, all the AA medallions, prayers, everything you could have to do with gold around her neck like that. And AA knuckle dusters. And she went, my name's Jessie, and by the grace of God, with the help of you people in the fellowship, I've nearly had the need to take the link today, and for that I'm grateful. She's Scottish, by the way. I'm trying not to swear, right? And I've got a thing called paranoia, condition of alcoholism. Don't know if anybody's got it, yeah, or had it. Where you think you know what other people are thinking, and it's never good. Yeah. Paranoia never tells you anything good about anybody else, what they're thinking. Always tells you bad, doesn't it? You know what I mean? But I reacted to Jesse. I would like to say it's the first time I've ever reacted to anybody in AA, but it's not. And I reacted. And I said, oh, I haven't come to AA to stop effing well swearing. And Jessie turned around and went, you ain't shut up. She's been my best friend ever since. You know what I mean? It talks about where people usually would not mix. You know, and I've done top tables with commissioners of police in AA and, you know, and all that sort of stuff. But I never got this easy. I met a woman in AA. She was 53, I was 24. And she said, would you like to come home for some dinner? And I thought it was a sign. I don't know about any of you who are like signs. I'm not very good at signs, you know what I mean? And Angie, I remember we met a girl once in AA. And Angie's my longest friend I've had in my life, you know. And I remember I met a girl in AA. I said, she took her coat off. Angie said, well, she does live there. That's what you do when you go and take your coat off, don't you? But getting back to this woman who's 53, I thought it was a sign. You know what I mean? I was a lunatic when I come to AA, you know? And she took me home, and her daughter took a shining to me. She was 23, and she asked me out after that. I was petrified about it. You know where it talks about in the Just for Today card, we will not be afraid to enjoy what is beautiful. I was petrified, you know. Anyway, she asked me out. I said, stay away from me, I'm a lunatic. And I was with her for my first 7 years of recovery, which was lovely, you know. And but getting back to my early days, I remember my first chair, I think I was about 5 months. I did drink again. My last drink was on June the 27th, 1986. And I call it drink. You can call it what you like, because a chair for me. I don't call it relapse. When I last took a drink, I didn't go to the off cell after I was off the drink for 8 months. And I was craving alcohol in them 8 months. Getting back to a little bit, I remember my first prayers in AA was, can I have a girlfriend? Can I have a car? Can my football team win the league? I don't know, but yeah, I'm a West Ham supporter, but keep an open mind. And can I have access to my son? Considering in mind that I endanger my son's life when I was drinking. And can I have some of this sobriety, whatever it is? But I don't know what it was. And I'm always, you know, when people go, sobriety is your own sobriety. I'm not Bill Wilson or anything like that. My sobriety is my sobriety. You know, it's not, you know what I mean? Some are sick than others. Some get well quicker than others, you know what I mean? And I got all these things really quickly. I got a car, never got a licence, I was about 2 years sober. I got a little job. My football team finished third that year, 85, 86, it was a miracle. And I got access to my little boy. He was 2.5 when I come to it, he was 3 when I had my last drink. And then I got access, and then I got supervised access, then I got access, then I got joint custody, then I got custody. I was a single parent for a number of years. And Angie and Billy remember my little boy, used to take him to all the dances, he was little. He's 34 now, my little boy. Basically what happened to me, after I was drunk again, I became desperate. And I met a man, a Yorkshireman, called Dave. And he said something which was quite controversial at the time. He said he knew how it works. I thought, I hate him. And he wore black trousers and white socks. And I thought, I hate him even more, you know what I mean? But I found myself saying to him, can you help me? And he was a Yorkshireman. And they say you become like your sponsor. Billy's been my sponsor, but I ain't become an Arsenal supporter yet. And Andy's helped me on my journey as well. I've had 4 sponsors in my recovery. All of them are still sober. I'm not saying I'm a great pick of character, but all of them, I knew all of them had something, a love for AA, you know. But this particular guy, he was a Yorkshireman, and he said he knew how it works, and I thought, you know. But I remember I went there, and he said, if you've got a big book, and I had a big book, I stole it from the meetings, you know, I was a thief when I came to AA, so I stole all the literature, not just the big book, loads of literature. I had it all beside my bed. Never read it, because I'm dyslexic, you know what I mean? It's like a big show, you know what I mean? But I met this guy, and he's a Yorkshireman, and I become a thing called fanatical. You know where it says we don't start off as an evangelist or a reformer? I went from not believing in God, you know, went to see Billy Graham over at Upton Park, it's the biggest crowd they've ever had, you know. I started walking around and meeting with a cross about this big, no little cross under the t-shirt for me like that, massive cross, like. And I read a book called AA Comes of Age, and talked about the history of AA, when Bill met Abby and the Oxford groups and all that, and Tex met, I don't know if it was Abby or Bill, and said, only Jesus can save you. And I remember I'm going to this meeting called Toynbee Hall in East London, and there was quite a few non-believers there, and I jumped up on the chair. I've got the big book in one arm, and the AA Comes of Age in the other, and it says here, only Jesus can save you, my friend. All the old timers doing a runner for me, you know what I mean? That girlfriend I was with, I moved into the spare room. I thought, if I sleep with her, it's a sin. You know, I become fanatical, you know what I mean? But I loved it. I remember my friend Angie came back from Australia, and was on the bus coming back from Hind Street, and she said to me, who the effing hell are you, Harry? I go away 2 years ago. You're a Cockney, and I come back, you're a Yorkshireman, you big cross and all that. I said, what's wrong here? She went, oh. I went back home to my girlfriend, and I said, she went, you see, I said, I see Angie. She went, how is she? I went, she's not very well, Angie. And I was sleeping in the spare room, and then she went to me, there's everything wrong with Angie, you want to look at yourself? I said, you're not very well neither, you know. I'm not well with everybody off, I don't know if anybody's ever done that, you know what I mean? And, but all jokes aside, it's a serious illness, and my life got better slowly. You know, I've got my sister staying with me at the moment. You know, and she was 58 the other day, and this is my dad's ring that I wear. He died about 19 years ago, 20 years ago. And my sister's got a star in her eye, and she was rubbing it with a little bit of gold on her eye. And I said, use daddy's ring, because that's what my dad used to do when he was younger. You know, it's an old thing we do, isn't it? You know, and. Yeah, my life has changed a real lot, you know. I found a home group in Hackney. It's a nice place, Hackney, if you've ever been there. And it's a nice place, actually. And I've become that fanatical person. I started going there early. The meeting started at 8. My mate once went there at 6:30, so I went there at 5. You know, and I sat in the same chair for 18 years there. And somebody once said to me, I ain't got your name on it. So I went really early, and I put my name under every chair in the room, Harry. And he came a few months later and said, ain't got your name in it. I said, I think if you ever look underneath it has. So he lifted up the chairs, it had Harry written on it, on every chair. And I like to have a laugh. I really like to have. I learned how to dance in recovery. You know, I never danced before I come to it. I'm an old punk rocker, skinhead, white Rastafarian. on the march off the march. I've been on marches, I don't even know what they're about. I mean, I've been on a miners' march. I think I did see a bit of coal once. But I'm in love with AA. I love seeing other people get recovery. I do help people, believe it or not. And my sister got married. I was the best man at the wedding when I was about 3.5 years sober. I'm a godfather to my nephew. He's an Arsenal supporter. I take him Arsenal against my will. And he's 24 now. He's a journalist. And I go Arsenal and I sing Arsenal songs. And he looks at me and says, "Why do you sing Arsenal songs, Uncle?" I said, "Well, I pay for it, so I might as well sing it." You know? And I live in a little two-bedroom flat on my own. I lived on my own for 23 years. I've had girlfriends in that time. And my son lived with me. My son's one of us, you know, he lost his sight for addiction. He begs around the streets of the East End. It's heartbreaking when I see my son. I cry. And I can cry today, you know what I mean? It's the hardest place to work this in the family, isn't it, you know? And my mum, who's the same, my dad died 19 years ago. I went to see her. I don't always share about it. I went to see her for twice a week for about 15 years. And for the last 6 years of her life, I went every other day to see her in the care home, Catherine Tate. And she was a great laugh, so I've got videos of her still, you know what I mean? And then Thursdays, Angie would go to see her, because it was Nails Day, and I don't know anything about Nails. And she died about 14 months or so, 15 months ago. And it's all right, you know, I'm not looking for a reason to drink. Although I'm 30 years sober, last year was a difficult year. I fell in love for the first time, it never worked out. It really hurt, really hurt. And I thought of a drink for the first time in years, and it's a clever illness, you know, it's a very clever illness. But I thought of God straight away, you know. And, I'm a chance taker, by the way. I'm not one of these people who go, "You shouldn't go out clubbing." I went through the rave scene in recovery. I used to go out 3 times a week in recovery when the rave scene come out. I used to go three, because it says in there, doesn't it, in our book, you know, an alcoholic who cannot meet an alcoholic situation still has an alcoholic mind. And I didn't get sober. I did live in fear for quite a while, but I live in faith now, you know. God has done for me what I can't do for myself. I can go out. I can have a lot. I'm getting on a bit now, 56. I don't go out clubbing now. But I like to dance. And I'm actually the Pontins Southeast Disco Dancing Champion 1995. It's not bad, is it, you know? And, I won that when I took my son to Pontins. You know, and I'm a godfather to God knows how many children, which is a privilege. I showed Billy a little video of my little goddaughter and my step. Granddaughter, they live above me. They're on my case. She brings me up. She's 8. She's like, "Where are you, Granddad? We're going out." And I love it. And I love it when it's Eid as well, because my neighbours always feed me. I love it when my door goes. I never say, "Who's there?" I just open it up and they go, "We've got some food for you." I go, "Oh, thank you very much." And then 10 minutes later, my other neighbours knock on the door. "We've got some food for you." I go, "Oh, thank you very much." You know, what I'm saying is, I'm not one of these people saying I fool the world out there, because I get on with the world very well. I don't really see it as them and us out there, you know. I get on with most of the world. I talk to everybody, you know. My mum used to say, "You talk too much." I reach out to people in the supermarket. I chat to everybody because I don't have all the old prejudice, you know. As a youngster, I'm a free man. I'm a free man, you know, and I don't go around going, "What do you think? What do you think? What do you think?" It's about what I think of myself. You know, am I worth cooking a dinner for? Am I worth going to have a pedicure? I don't know if anybody's had a pedicure. I suggest you do, guys. You know, I like creams. I've got 3 creams, one for my hair, one for my face. I don't know if I'm alone with this. I'm like coconut butter for my body. I love them. You know what I mean? I like taking care of myself, you know. And I'm not gossip. I'm not interested in what anybody else thinks of anybody else's recovery. I'm just not interested. Yeah. And I just keep on, I like to keep my mind very open. I don't always know the plan. I just go with it. But I'm indebted to AA. You know, I'm indebted to it. I don't talk about how many people I sponsor, but I do sponsor people. I do it the same way it was done to me. Mm-hmm. I read through the book. And I love the promises, and I love the step 5 promises. The feeling that the drink problem has gone will often come strongly. You know, what a promise to a chronic alcoholic, if you're a chronic alcoholic, you know. And yeah, I'm not really into this is an opinion I want to share, but hey, I won't be me if I don't share an opinion. I'm not really into heroes that I've never met from the other side of the world. You know, like YouTube heroes, you know, who come, get paid to do service and then go off. It's a free gift. You know, if you've been given this freely, you've got to give it away freely. You know, it's a free gift. There's no professionals in AA. The highest I can get is sober. You know, and I think Billy shared it earlier. Don't tell me sober, show me sober. And I'll get a lot out of reading with people, reading through the book with people. You know, but I often feel sorry for them. There was a guy there, we read for about 2 hours. He said, can I finish it? I said, no, you've got to do another half an hour. You know, because I get fired up by it, you know, and yeah, it's a good life, you know. And I'm just an ordinary guy that likes football, don't always like kind of work, and I don't know why I looked at Ollie there, he's a Tottenham sport person. I like a laugh, you know, and I'm indebted to AA. I owe Alcoholics Anonymous my whole life, mm-hmm. You know, I'm so indebted to it. And, I'm only sober by the grace of God. All the glory belongs to God that I don't always understand, but it does belong to Him. I'm sober by the grace of God. It's a fact in my life. Central fact, it talks about it. Central fact in my life. That's why I'm sober. And yeah, that's it. That's me. Thank you,
Matt Harris.
Thank you.
Thank you both, Sylvia and Harry. Thanks so much for sharing. And before we close the Serenity Prayer, I think we're going to pass a pot for Tradition 7. This is for, we're self-supporting, all the proceeds are going to go towards next year. So yeah, if you've got any additional, this is going to go towards next year. So before the Serenity Prayer, because I don't know who's in charge of that, can someone pass a pot round?
There's a pot.
Yeah? Oh, we're not doing it, Burns? After the next one? After the next meeting?
Yeah,
okay, no problem. Right then, we'll close with the Serenity Prayer then, and we'll have a 5 minute break, and we're going to start with James as the last speaker.
Keep it going, yeah.
All right. Serenity Prayer at the end. All right, one more round of applause then for Harry and Sylvia.